And the weather today, highs of 8 degrees centigrade, lows of 5 degrees centigrade. It's going to be dry, rather cloudy at times, but there will be some bright or sunny spells.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Yes, so in Gibraltar, just to check times, of course, it's coming around to 2.5 minutes past 9 a.m. Isn't that correct, Gabriella?
Yep, we're an hour later.
Well, so, I mean, have we got a lot to look forward to in that hour as we actually head through the next 60 minutes to your good self and catch up? I mean, was it a good hour? Was it a well morn? Was it a red hour? Was it a blue hour? What sort of hour was it?
Good hour?
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. That's all we needed to know. It was a good hour, which is fantastic stuff. Okay, so, are you worried or fretting or concerned at all, Gabriella, about Black Friday? Or is it something which, being from Gibraltar, you just think that's another one of those American marketing techniques and we're not interested at all, and don't talk to me about that, or indeed Cyber Monday?
We do have Black Friday here, but not to the extent of the Americans, or I don't know how it is in the UK anymore. But we don't have the open at ridiculous o'clock and everyone queuing outside a shop. It's really just a few shops go on sale.
A few shops go on sale or have a sale and so on. Ben in Brighton, Black Friday, do they go crazy?
I think some of them do, but obviously not to the extent of the Americans or just people in general, really, in bigger cities. It's a bit chilled out, I think.
Last year, Black Friday topped £3 billion. £3 billion. And 2016, we're looking to actually increase that as well.
I think a lot of it's online now, though. I mean, even if you look at Amazon, for example, although other sites are available, if you look at Amazon, for example, they've got a Black Friday sale on, and you know, there's so much on there, which is... Oh. You know, on sale, which I might take advantage of.
But how are you influenced by that? I mean, Gabriella, are you influenced by YouTubers? Are you influenced by bloggers? Do you actually, or are you not influenced at all? Do you actually set the trends rather than follow them?
Oh, what to buy from YouTubers? Mm. I always check out YouTube reviews before I buy any makeup. It's just good to see how it looks in a person before you buy it, and. I don't know, maybe, sometimes if I want to buy any kind of electronics or a phone or something like that, I'll look at YouTube reviews and see how see how they review it first. Even a car, I think. I did that with a car I recently bought. I looked at the YouTube reviews.
Clearly, Game are actually right in this survey. 52% of 18 to 25-year-olds are now influenced more by YouTubers and bloggers than anyone else. Does that impact on yourself, Ben?
I don't know, certain things maybe, but not a lot of things. I don't know, I think it's the new world, isn't it?
I mean, for instance, if you were thinking about how can I actually celebrate the joys of Thanksgiving with a fine meal in Lincoln, would you be influenced by a YouTube from the Atrium and advertising their latest routine, or would you be influenced more by Ben reading out what you can actually get at the Atrium today? Let's try it, Ben.
Well, I don't know.
What can they get in the Atrium today?
Well, it's a Thanksgiving special today.
It is. It's a Thanksgiving special in the Atrium at the University of Lincoln.
And for £3.50, you can get a roast turkey stuffing with pigs in blankets, and Thanksgiving sauce.
Are you attracted by that, Gabriella, or would you have preferred it to be on a YouTube channel, in which case you could actually see the actual thing? I mean,
I could have read it more glamorous.
Like, I think the description is quite good.
Yeah.
I can imagine how it would look.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't think I've ever YouTubed food.
No.
I've done a few Gordon Ramsay videos.
Well, of course, we can actually ask William Sitwell, has he YouTubed food, which I'm sure he will have done before, and we'll sort of, you know, engage with the whole process. We'll warm that up. I mean, you know, that's not going to be the sole reading. Ben will actually sort of get that through the whole sort of process.
So I can read it like the lady of MasterChef, if you want me to.
Do that?
Yeah, I can do it.
Go.
Roast turkey, stuffing with pigs in blankets, and Thanksgiving sauce.
Yeah, I mean, if that doesn't...
Now would you buy it?
Exactly. Heading away from that sort of point of view was brilliant stuff, and that, of course, is the Atrium at the University of Lincoln in Lincoln, England, not Lincoln, Nebraska. It's always important we make these points. So what does the rest of the day have in store for your good self, Gabriella? Will it be a case of you'll be looking with envy at the Americanos and the Thanksgiving celebrations, or will you be saying, no, I'm all gearing up for our own festive season of December?
Well, I'm off on leave today, so I don't have to work, which is great. And it is pouring outside.
Is it? In Gibraltar?
Yes, it's been raining for the past week, thunderstorms, and it's going to rain for the next full week.
Mm.
So we've got about 2 weeks of straight rain. And I just looked out my window because I heard my drain was really, really loud. And it was absolutely pouring, which I'm not looking forward to walking Frodo now. But
can he not have a little boat?
I'm going to plan on staying indoors now because of it. I might go to the shop, but I think it's kind of ruined.
A kind of miniature raft, would that actually help? So it could actually sort of float along with your good self and maybe, you know, a little... I mean, he would actually sit well as a sort of pirate pug, I think. You know, it's, you get him to sort of growl every so often. I mean, he could be the equivalent of a Gibraltarian parrot, really, obviously.
Actually, the rain was so heavy, I wrote a story on yesterday's front page that it sunk a boat.
Well,
in our marina, it was a small boat, but the rain was so heavy, a man turned up at 8 in the morning and he found his boat underwater because all the rainwater had got trapped in the boat and sunk it.
It literally sunk the boat. Amazing.
Yeah, so that's how much it's raining. Well, it's sinking boats.
And talking about boats, you'd be pleased to know that not only was the island of Gibraltar featured in the James Bond movie Living Daylights, but it was also featured actually in the barrel scene for You Only Live Twice, masquerading as the Hong Kong Harbour.
Really?
A little bit of interesting sort of fact there. Courtesy of Lewis Gilbert, the director, in terms of what actually happened for Bondo files that are actually out there. And as you actually said, Gabriella, straight rain, look at the positive side. If it was horizontal rain, you'd be even more worried. So, you know, that's an important thing. So it's good to sort of sort these whole things through. Well, Gabriella, stay dry. Have you got an umbrella to hand?
I do, but it's so windy around here. I'm probably going to have to wear a hood.
Blows inside out, etc. Well, you know, ensure that you're sort of effectively balanced. I'm sure, worst case scenario, you know, Frodo will look after you if he's not asleep, that is. Is he awake at present?
He hates the rain.
He's
awake, but he hates the rain, so I don't think he's going to be much help.
He's not going to go out, really. He's going to sort of refuse flatly.
He refuses when he sees
These are the kind of critical things. Famous Beasts and Where to Find Them, astonishingly, didn't actually feature Frodo, as far as I can tell. But, you know, it was a Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Well, you know, Hannah went AWOL. Well, she didn't go AWOL. She was going AWOL this morning, but she went absolutely deliriously happy with joy over Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Wonder what Richard Fitzwilliams will make of this particular production.
We'll see.
Will be quite interesting. But Bennett Means, as you are the sole midriff driver in the studio, it falls to your good self. You see, clearly the others are sort of queuing outside the atrium just to wait to actually have the sort of 12 noon event.
Getting their pumpkin pie.
Some of this. Would you like to put those last two questions to Gabriella?
Gabriella, have you enjoyed your 10-foot length this morning?
Yeah, thank you.
Lovely. And will you be joining us again?
Next week.
Lovely.
Ben, 70 years.
Until what?
Until Harry Potter actually read the work of Newt Scamander and he went to Hogwarts. It was a 70-year period before the whole Potter-esque thing discovered Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I wonder if that's how long Richard Fitzwilliams has been waiting to actually see Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Has it been 70 years, Richard?
Well, something like that, but, you know, I won't go into the exact details. Is it to say that, I mean, this spin-off, as it were, from J.K. Rowling, it's the she's produced, she's also written the screenplay, and it's directed by David Yates, who is a pretty safe pair of hands. I mean, I love the Potter movies. I do have to say that I'm delighted that we've got another magical fantasy film which is being so successful.
Well, as we said earlier, Hannah went and saw the event, and I think she was delighted with it. So delighted that, obviously, after exploding with joy last night, we don't know where she is these days.
Oh, dear. Well, perhaps... who knows?
Who knows? Exactly.
Yeah, who knows?
little magical routine. Yeah.
Wall,
maybe it's one for next week.
There could have been a disaster, an Obscurus, for example.
Visibilis, Invisibilis, etc. I decided to go and see Arrival, actually, in the end.
I want to see Arrival. Yeah.
Arrival was very, very good. About it before.
We did, exactly. So that was my choice. I thought, well, we'll just leave Potter to one side, or indeed Newt Scamander, because how can you, after Newt Gingrich, you know, how can anybody who's named Newt really be? And of course, there was Ken Livingstone. He liked his Newt. And it's just, maybe it's a prejudice. Maybe it's one of those last prejudices I need to actually work on, Richard, to begin to evolve.
Well, this is a set in 1920s New York, and there's plenty of prejudice between wizards and
Muggles.
The non-majority.
Muggles, that's what they're referred to as, Muggles.
Muggles, but the Muggles are in the majority, and the echoes, it's the dark side of the force, almost as though Donald Trump was already spreading malign forces and feelings.
But Richard, he's basically taking back all the things he said he was going to do. He hasn't put Hillary in jail. He hasn't sort of criticised the New Yorker. He's just a nice chap. He was obviously misunderstood during the whole campaign.
Well, you talk to the press who attended that briefing with him. I'm not talking about the New York Times, but I am talking about the NBC and other. I mean, we don't know. We wait to see. I've been doing pieces this week on the proposed state visit, which is certainly likely to be a bit unorthodox, so I do seriously think it's a good idea, because he is a showman, and this, when you have the pomp and pageantry, when you've got the ceremonial, when you've got the economic aspects of it, the city and the bank, the Guildhall banquet with the Lord Mayor, I mean, economically, of course, it's very, very important for us. There's no denying it, and whether the laying a wreath at the grave of the unknown warrior at Westminster Abbey, or indeed meeting the politicians, the whole thing. Interestingly, with the state visit, with its 3 or 4 days, towards the end, the visitor chooses what they'd like to do. So what will he choose?
I think, obviously, he's looking for an honorary knighthood.
He gets that automatically.
Yeah, exactly.
They all do, but don't forget that Ceausescu of Romania and Mugabe of Zimbabwe had theirs stripped from them.
Fundamentally, Richard, do we really care as long as we remain a united kingdom?
Well, that's very well. Which film do you want me to review?
I know, exactly. Is it Rosamund Pike?
Crap in that. Very well laid, yes. I think it's very, very important we remain a united kingdom, I have to say.
So, shall we move on then, after Fantastic Beasts, which
well,
have you not finished as yet?
You got very impatient with Fantastic.
I did, yeah, clearly.
My goodness me, you can't even discuss it. I mean, Eddie Redmayne playing Newt Scamander, we first meet him visiting New York. He's got the suitcase and a variety of beasts of all sorts, types, descriptions are in the suitcase. And I will be just very brief, very broad, but I do wish what we've been able to see in this movie, where he his suitcase is accidentally stolen by Jacob Kowalski, played by Dan Fogler, a factory worker who accidentally carries it off and therefore gets involved in the plot. And there's Catherine Waterston as who works at the Ministry of Magic, and there, of course, they are threatened by the Muggles, and there's segregation, it's a time of prohibition. All the rest of it, I won't go on because I can see that
we've got
to mention Colin Farrell as Percival Graves, who works there, and he has a feeling that there may be an Obscurus around because there have been destructive episodes all around the city. Now, I have to agree, I'm just being as brief as I can, that there is something about this movie that was lacking, because I don't know the books. I do think that they're trying to start another franchise. But what interested me was the decor, there's a wonderful speakeasy run by a gremlin, this sort of thing, which I enjoyed in Harry Potter. And I have to say that we see so much of various beasts of one sort or another that there isn't the time there should be to concentrate on getting to know some rather interesting humans. We've got cameos galore, from John Bush to Samantha Morton, but there's a lot about the creatures and there's too little about the characters. It's enjoyable overall, but it's just one of those films that people want to go and see, because those who like Harry Potter, and I mean, the Obscurus becomes a little tedious, I thought, quite frankly, nor is the darker side developed as it might be, though Colin Farrell does his best. He's an aura, the aura of Percival Graves, and he suspects Credence Barebone may be responsible for he knows not what, and we do discover. But all the links with Trump, the segregation aspects of it and so on, I mean, they are a little unsubtle. This is a series, there are going to be two more, I warn you, so this, I
thought there were four more scheduled, actually, Richard. So.
Well, you may be right. If so, we'll have to discuss all.
And surely we're referencing P.L. Travers' Mary Poppins with respect to having a bag and a carpet bag, which has got lots of space inside the whole thing. But never mind. Everything has its own influences, including Prince Seretse Khama of Botswana, who once caused an international stir when he married a white woman from London in the late 1940s.
Yes, he did indeed. And this is the film. It's one of Africa's great love stories, and it's directed by Amo Santi, who made such a good job of Belle. I was so impressed with that. This is a movie which certainly has a good cast. Seretse Khama is played by David Oyelowo. He was brilliant in Selma, and he gives a good performance here. And Ruth Williams is played by Rosamund Pike. It was indeed an unconventional match. She was studying law in the late 1940s. She's a typist. They fall in love, and there is enormous resistance to their marriage because his tribe, led by his uncle, a regent, Chekedi Khama, a very good performance by Vusi Kuneni, and the British government, which is terrified of the power of apartheid South Africa, are implacably opposed to it. And it's a story that should be told, and there's no doubt about it. It's, I think, a movie that's been well reviewed critically, but also I hope there's a lot of interest, because visually it's very strong. My one quibble, and it's a very serious one, is that it is one of those movies that you can almost you can predict how individual characters are going to behave in almost every scene. The script of this movie is stilted. The duplicitous Brits behave in cheap and rude ways, which I doubt, though what they did undoubtedly was what the film has revealed. I doubt they would have actually behaved like this. The British separate them. If Khama's in exile in London, Williams actually goes to Botswana. And the way she behaves there and they behave to her, you could see it's been crafted in a studio. This is not a spontaneous film. It's very cliched. But nonetheless, it's a story, despite a very stilted script, that needs to be told. And it was extraordinary. Governments behaved so appallingly towards a couple who, not only were deeply in love with each other, but went on to forge a future where Seretse Khama became the prime minister of a democratic Botswana eventually. But this shows it when it was the protectorate of Bechuanaland and surrounded by a powerful neighbor who might have done anything. And of course, there is an interesting aspect too when minerals are discovered, which is what gives Botswana eventually some hope, because it's one of the world's poorest countries. Amo Santi certainly directs with feeling. It's got a first-class cast. But there is, I found, knowing being born in Cape Town, I mean, I did find a very, very stilted aspect to this movie, which I didn't find in Belle, where you just knew how individual characters were going to behave. The script just needed more drama, which the story has, but it had to be more convincing, at least for me.
A love that defeated an empire.
Yes, that challenging an empire, one of the Brits.
Well, the Empire Will Strike Back. Oh, no, that's another
franchise.
Oh,
well, yes, so that's just about...
That's Star Wars Rogue One. Never mind. We'll get to that later.
That line, it's a good one for a poster, but it is a bit of a cliche.
Indeed. Okay, so, Ben, let's go with Fantastic Beasts first. Will you be checking that little number out?
Yes. Only because certain people have required me to come and visit the cinema with them to watch it.
It sounds as if you're being... manacled.
Well, I feel like I can't watch it because I haven't watched all of the other Harry Potters. I've only seen about half of them. And I feel like I need to watch the rest of them to be
honestly,
able to watch Fantastic
Once you've seen one, it's pretty much the same plot.
Well, I mean, if you haven't seen the Rumpo, the Niffler, I mean, you know...
It'll be fine, you know, just go under sufferance, that's the important thing. It's kind of, it's a variation on actually cuffing, actually. Have you come across the term cuffing before, Richard?
I haven't.
Well, cuffing apparently is a term used by Tinder users to match with a partner for the winter months. The cold weather and prolonged indoor activities may result in people who would normally rather be single finding themselves desiring to be cuffed or tied down by a serious relationship. So, you know, that might involve going to see, you know...
Fantastic Beasts.
Exactly, my point. Anyway, moving on, what about a United Kingdom? Will you be going to see that?
I think I would. I think it's quite an interesting story. Who's the actress again? She's in...
Rosamund Pike, the voice of Lady Penelope, the person from
Die
Another Day.
I was going to say, yeah. Yes. That's what I remember her from. But yeah, no, I think I would.
Age actress, too. I mean, she was Hitchcock Blonde. I remember most memorably she was in.
Exactly. So would a United
Kingdom... I
think
I would, yeah.
Yes, there we are.
Yeah.
Nice stuff when you put together. Richard, that brings us to the end of another fantastic Fitzwilliam's piece. See what we did
well,
there?
I must say, we nearly had the shortest review we had in the movie. I mean, that I can see you're not going to be drawn to Newt Scamander. I hardly mentioned Eddie Redmayne, and yet, this...
I still think he hasn't beaten his role in the Wachowskis' Jupiter Ascending, which obviously was truly
excellent. That was an absolute...
But another Fantastic Beast, and what a wonderful time to actually have a turkey on Thanksgiving Day. It's nice that you remembered, Richard. It's very
good. Oh, my goodness me, you're on form.
Well, you know, I just paving the way for Ben to ask those last two questions. Go, Mr. Lewis.
Richard, have you enjoyed your 10 of Flintlanders this morning?
Well, I've been a bit afraid. I mean, I've had
never.
Giving Fantastic Beasts.
J.K. Rowling will remember the fantastic battles you put forward on her behalf, and I'm sure.
Well, I didn't really want to fight that much on behalf of this movie because I was actually rather disappointed, simply because, enjoyable though it was, as I say, the characters really didn't develop them. The Art Deco, some of the decorations, the period sense of it was great fun, and yes, I enjoyed it overall, but I did feel that Harry Potter's those movies had a certain charm. I didn't feel this had. I felt that it was finding its way, and when we have the second one, I hope, despite the box office receipts, which of course are soaring through the roof.
Bring back Chris Columbus, that's what we say. You know, he started off the first two, he did Mrs. Doubtfire, what's not to appreciate?
What's not to appreciate in 9 months, was it?
Yes. The final question, Ben?
Will you be joining us again soon, Richard?
I look forward to it. We've got plenty to discuss next week. Allied and Sully. Nothing to rush in either of those. There's plenty to to like in one and to damn in another.
Oh, come on.
Brilliant. Can't wait.
It's extraordinary. Meanwhile, speaking of Fantastic Beasts... gift you can actually give to a child is the gift of a book, and indeed the magical time-travelling experience of actually getting involved with books and reading in general. But it would seem that parents and teachers have been raising concerns that school reading books are not imaginative enough. And so with the launch of Reading Planet, a revolutionary new reading programme for school children aged 4 to 7, we're delighted to be able to welcome ace author extraordinaire from teen fiction, from children's fiction, the legendary Tamsin Murray to the
the programme today. How are you, Tamsin?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Excellent stuff. I love the line, Tamsin, that on your website you live in Hertfordshire, at least your body does, but your mind tends to prefer imaginary places and wanders off wherever it can, which is wonderful stuff here. You can even bring you to a radio studio. But let's talk a little bit more about this particular aspect, that it would seem that the books are great, but if they simply become dull, uninteresting, unimaginative, etc., they're going to put people off reading, aren't they?
Well, I think that times have changed. Some of the reading schemes that are out there in schools at the moment are, they've been around for a bit tired and perhaps slightly outdated. Illustration styles have changed, research into what getting has changed, and so books that are perhaps 20 years old might not be as up-to-date and fresh as they could be.
With the screen-based culture, of course, it's perhaps no surprise to find that 78% of teachers think that being exposed to technology from a young age has actually made it harder to get children engaged with reading. Is there some kind of symbiotic way in which we can actually work with the screen here to hopefully lead to the printed page and vice versa?
Well, I don't think there's any substitute, actually, for holding a book in your hands and turning the pages. Books, especially when you're a young child, are very tactile, and it's a more of a sensory experience. But certainly, if you have a child who's more interested in screens, then you could encourage them to read e-books. And some reading schemes are better than others at having e-books available. So there's a new scheme, which you've already mentioned, called Reading Planet by Rising Stars, which not only has physical books, but it has e-books as well. So perhaps by a two-pronged approach, we might be able to engage with those children a little bit better.
Indeed. I'm not sure whether the current crop of students that I'm working with at the University of Lincoln might be the last of the generation who still prefer the physicality of books, because clearly that whole notion of, well, it's got to be a virtual system is brought to the fore here. Nevertheless, with all these digital distractions and so on, we still find that there are strategies that are being used to actually get people to read, children to read. 60% folk have actually admitted to bribing their children to get them to read, with rewards including late bedtime sweets and chocolate. Surely reading should be its own reward, for goodness sake.
It should, and as the mother of a five-year-old who's using a reading scheme to learn to read, I can tell you that that is definitely the case. There's nothing quite like seeing him work out a word or decode the mystery of reading. It's a real buzz for me to see that. So I personally don't have to bribe him to read. He loves reading. But I can see that digital distractions are a problem, and that's why it's more important than ever to ensure that reading books that children have are engaging with beautiful illustrations, bright, up-to-date, with things that modern children can relate to, and also that incorporate the latest research. So, for example, Reading Planet incorporates speech rhythm training, and speech rhythm is the way that we use spoken language, so intonation and stress on words, and all of that put together means that, you know, books are really things that children can't resist.
Looking back through one's own experience, I think I was blessed that my parents did actually spend time with me reading and so on, which meant that in a sense I was ahead of the game when it came to school and so on, which I think at that particular time people said, oh no, you should leave it all to the school. But I think it is interesting that 80% of teachers have also agreed that reading at home most nights actually puts children not just weeks but months ahead in terms of actually developing their speech and their vocabulary and indeed overall intelligence.
I think that's true. Certainly, reading to my little boy has helped him to develop a love of books. His vocabulary is outstanding as well. That's something that's been commented on by his teachers. He's in reception now. And I just think if parents can normalise reading, can show reading as something that's an everyday part of life, then they're ahead of the game when it comes to encouraging and helping their children to achieve at school.
I love the sort of notion of some of your text, Tamsin, the notion of completely Cassidy drama queen, instructions for a second-hand art. That's for the more young adult readers. What sort of aspects can people get for the Tamsin Murray young person's reader to actually go to?
Well, you can check out my website, and there is a whole range of books there. I write for very young children, so I write picture books right up to young adult, and I also write adult books as well. Most of my books are funny, but my latest book, Instructions for a Secondhand Heart, is a bit of a weepy.
Yes, I did think it was sort of quite sort of traumatic in its own way. We'll have to sort of ease that through, basically, until people get to that whole notion of the onset of, I suppose, really teenage angst, perhaps, we would say, and that whole sort of aspect of that. But let's go back to how to keep children interested in books. What's the best website, apart from your good self, of course, on tamsinmurray.co.uk, to find out further information about, you know, strategies and ways in which people can actually, parents in particular, look to keep their children interested in books?
Well, if you're looking at the Reading Planet books, there's a website, risingstars-uk.com. Just search for Reading Planet once you get onto the website, and that will open up all of the books in the scheme, where there's plenty of titles from non-fiction right through to banded fiction by great authors such as Adam and Charlotte Gillane and Linda Chapman.
And in a global world in which we exist and work through from that perspective, how does Britain actually compare with other European countries, other American-based formats? Do we have our own way forward with respect to this? Or is it a case of actually these are global challenges, whether you're actually in Beijing or Birmingham?
Do you know what? I think that a lot is made of comparing us to other countries. I think what would be really lovely is if we could just let children work at their own level. And what we need to do is provide really engaging, fantastic content for them so that books are irresistible. Because, you know, reading is really at the heart of everything that we do. And if we can create a nation of readers, then I think we're going to take over the world in a good way.
Tamsin, I couldn't agree more. Hearty hear, hear from that perspective. It's been fabulous touching base with your good self today. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme from your own perspective? Has it been okay for you?
I have had a fantastic time, thank you.
So hopefully we can connect with you again in 2017 and find out more not only of your own magical stuff, but also about the importance of reading and indeed great narratives as well. Will you return?
I will, that would be fab, thank you.
Ian Lennox, good morning, welcome to the programme, how are you?
Good morning, Alex, and congratulations. I thought it was a very interesting interview, then.
Oh, thank you very much, sir. And when it comes...
I've never said that before.
No, you haven't, actually. It's very... And Ian, of course, being one of the former ace producers at Tyne Tees Television, knows what a good interview sounds like. So there we are. Nice to put together.
Very good.
Good morning, Sally Monday. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good morning.
Sally, of course, the marketing officer extraordinaire from the... No, events officer. No, what's the official title we should use and available on you? Is it Dame Sally Monday these days?
No.
Baroness Monday?
Trade sales. Don't give me marketing. Don't give me...
It's all right. Well, you've done that as well. I mean, so trade and sales.
Yeah.
That's at the Lincolnshire Showground. Do you know, Ian, there are only 36 hours before the press night opens at the Lincolnshire Showground. In fact, it'll have almost gone by then, actually, in 36 hours. 34 hours, actually. And that just means that there are a matter of 48 hours before the show of the season will effectively be open. The food and gift fair at the Lincolnshire Showground will be open for business this Saturday, the 26th of November and the 27th of November. The ideal preparation for Cyber Monday and the ideal recovery for Black Friday.
Absolutely.
How many days does it run for?
Press night is on Friday, and then it's Saturday and Sunday, so 9
till... Oh, just the weekend, isn't it?
Yep, just the weekend.
And how many visitors do you normally get?
Last year we had about 8,000 over the course of the weekend, so, good numbers, over 150 stalls, cookery demonstrations, Santa's workshop this year, lots of craft things for the children to do.
Is it all open air? No,
it's all indoors.
Well, very wise.
Yes, very wise.
Well, you say that, but the weather has been...
Well, November.
Exactly. Oh, you know, there are bits that are open in the open. I'm sure there were sort of areas you could actually go outside and have...
Indoors.
So everything is indoors now?
Yeah, absolutely. Both buildings and the two buildings are linked
yes,
with a marquee
exactly.
walkway.
Yeah.
But that, you're still undercover, Alex.
That's very true.
The only bit of outdoor is parking your car, which, of course, is free.
It's just so wonderful. You just don't know what
it's
to do.
USP.
To the whole thing. Ben, will you be attending?
I can't, unfortunately. I know.
Ben.
I do apologise. Especially at the sight of food as well.
My
key love in life.
And getting Ian to leave the town of Newcastle upon Tyne, it's not going to happen, I'm afraid. I mean, unless...
Not on a Saturday.
Not
on,
yeah, exactly.
Newcastle at home.
Well, you see... Despite the success that Lincoln City are currently sort of experiencing, I believe second in the Vanarama conference division. That's very exciting from that point of view. I think second to Forest Green, in case you're wondering. Ian, you may not be wondering. You may be more interested in finding out what did Camo actually bring along for us yesterday from his Nashville abode. What indeed was actually voted the best tune we've ever heard Camo actually provide for us by a youngster who is actually about the same age as Ben, who's been generating all manner of wonderful excitements as far as country music is concerned. Or maybe you weren't wondering about that at all and you don't care about Paulina Jane in any way, shape or form.
I just want to hear the music.
That's a good answer. Video has free hugs as well. Sally, love's gonna always win. What did you make of the sound?
Very nice indeed.
Well, it's a wake-up call. Ben Lewis, what did you make of the sound of Love's Gonna Always Win with Paulina Jane?
I think it's a good song, but it's not really my thing, to be honest. I'm not really a country person.
How did it sound across the telephone lines up to Newcastle-upon-Tyne, Ian Lennox?
Well, certainly one of the better ones you played for me.
Oh.
What I found irritating was because it's on down the phone line, I couldn't pick up any of the background instruments, and it just sounded like a blur. And that became increasingly annoying.
Well,
I like the change of pace of the song, and the girl's got a reasonably good country western style voice, I think.
Well, her name is Paulina Jane, J-A-Y-N-E. could be a sort of Jane Southall connection, really, in many ways, though. Mm. Or maybe not. Actually, they do look a bit alike. If you go to Paulina Jane's website, and you can also see her video on all the various channels as well. So it's a wonderful compilation of great things happening, which is probably needed in these somewhat challenging times that we are actually living in from that point of view. I'm sorry, Ben, but obviously Brighton beginning to lose pace now in trying to keep up with Newcastle upon time.
Ever so slightly, but I wouldn't put it down too quickly.
I wouldn't bother with us, I'd just bother with getting up.
Could be worse, though. You could be a Man City fan. That's worse at the end of the day.
What do you mean?
Last night's game.
Yeah, we could have 1-1 draw, 10 men against 10 men. It all makes perfect sense, really.
The Arsenal game's quite entertaining.
I think it's obvious that Newcastle are going to go up either first or second, I presume first, but I hope Brighton come up as
I hope so it doesn't end up like it did last year.
Meanwhile, Sally Mundy, does it impact on your life at all whether or not Newcastle, Brighton, either, both or neither go up?
No.
There you go.
I do have to say,
it's
though,
a very sensible position to be in. If you
I am surrounded at home by football fans, but I am probably swearing when I say Chelsea features in our house, as does Scunthorpe United, actually.
Nice.
So interesting juxtaposition. We're also doing very well.
Yeah, the Iron.
Up the Iron.
Are Scunthorpe United doing very well?
Yeah, they are.
Which division are they in?
Haven't a clue.
Ian Botham used to play for Scunthorpe, doesn't he? He did.
Yes, he did.
Ian Botham used to play for Scunthorpe Reserves, possibly the first time a couple of times. And there was, because he was a posh cricketer, as he was viewed at, there was one of his opponents made the very, very grave mistake of treating him as some sort of softie. Mm. And Mr. Botham proved in a few seconds it was the exact opposite.
Because he's beefy. Beefy.
I don't know if you've ever seen him, but my God, I wouldn't like to insult him unless I could run considerably faster than he could.
But the Midweek Drive Morning Edition is not about insulting former cricketing legends, even at 13 minutes to 9 o'clock, because John Wen will be most upset with respect to that. Now, the key thing is, Ian, what's happened with respect to England's cricketing debacles? What's been going wrong against it? India, why?
They've been found out. I mean, England don't produce spin bowlers. Therefore, the batsmen don't face on the county circuit many very, very good ones. So they go to India, which is the home of the best spinners in the world, really. And they're facing three spinners. One's a young lad who's just coming in who's very good. But the other two are a quality that we haven't produced, apart from Swan, in the last 30 years. And
there you have it, Sally. You know, I know you were fretting, and Jane Southall and the team, Rachel, and obviously Amelia Chambers. You know, every meeting at the Lincolnshire Agricultural Showground, when you're not talking about the next wonderful Lincolnshire show next year, 2017, it's a case of why have England not been producing its spin bowling?
Absolutely.
I think Australia have been
just getting warmed up there.
Australia have been in a bit of a difficult situation lately as well.
Yeah. Cricket. Yes, that's the one good thing.
Yeah.
But whilst we're talking about good things, what good thing is happening at the Atrium today, Ben, that I'd love you to actually promote? Because this was a message that came across from the Atrium at the University of Lincoln via our very own Jeff Thompson, and he said, please promote this. So we said, in fact, Sally, would you like to actually just read this delight out in your wonderful branding trade scenario way and share with us what you can actually enjoy to celebrate the Feast of Thanksgiving?
You can enjoy today, all for the princely sum of £3.50, roast turkey, stuffing with pigs in blankets, and Thanksgiving sauce. What is Thanksgiving
sauce?
Don't
ask.
I was thinking that, unless it's like a pumpkin sauce or some description.
Probably some kind of cranberry.
The American thing with cranberries in it. Yeah.
Or for an additional sum, for the price of £4.95, all of the above, with two portions of vegetables and a portion of potatoes.
I'm amazed you don't
have three portions of veg, then, is it?
A trip to visit just for that, Sally.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I almost got on the bus there.
Close, but yes, it's another sort of classic routine from that point of view. Okay, right, in the second part of the programme, we're speaking to Dr. Jessica Carbino, our in-house sociologist for Tinder. I don't know if you're familiar with Tinder. It is, of course, a dating app, Ian. Exactly. We'll be really providing advice on why buying a present is not always appropriate. If you've only been on a couple of dates, what do you buy for Christmas? Should you actually look out for subtle hints that your significant other may drop? How can you actually pick up these subtle hints? And how can you actually do something special if you don't do big every year? And what indeed is the phenomenon of cuffing? Have you ever come across cuffing, Sami?
No.
Cuffing. apparently it's used by Tinder users to match with a partner for the winter months. It's going into hibernation, really. Cold weather and the prolonged...
Oh, bad language.
No.
That's a bit dodgy.
Please. cuffing, pronounced cuffing, OK. The cold weather and prolonged indoor activities may result in people who would normally rather be single finding themselves desiring to be cuffed or tied down by a serious relationship. It's worth debating in terms of, you know, obviously, upcoming children, etc. So we'll be talking with Jessica Carbina about that. And she's got a PhD in sociology from UCLA. So she knows of what she speaks. And then we'll talk about Black Friday and other things together with William Sitwell's Tremendous Awards and Arthur, Arthur? No, of course, Alan Stevens, who's joining us in the latter part of the production.
Arthur's a Wednesday evening man.
He was, yes, exactly. Arthur Weingarten is doing his stuff there quite rapidly. And Arthur McKenzie, of course, who occasionally has dropped in for this particular thing, but hasn't been there for some time since Ian returned from Canada. No, not Canada. He was in Europe. Whereabouts in Europe?
It was Bulgaria, wasn't it?
Bulgaria.
Oh, yeah. Bulgaria, I see. We do pay attention, Ian, even
the
though...
Black Sea.
Not to be confused with Black Friday. Anyway, that's pretty much it. Apart from saying, Sally,
yes.
What exhibitors... I mean, obviously, there's too many to actually name them all, because there's a good few numbers that are actually there. But in terms of exhibitors that the listener might be able to check out over the weekend at the fabulous Food and Gift Fair at the Lincolnshire Showground.
Well, obviously, we pride ourselves on our Lincolnshire produce. Oh. So our fabulous bakeries with the world-famous Lincolnshire plum bread will be there. So we've got Myers, Pocklington's, Wellborn's bakeries. All our wonderful cheese makers, so Poacher Cheese, Cote Hill, Lime Bank, wonderful Lincolnshire sausage, so Uncle Henry's will be there, as will Mountains Boston sausage. And as well as that, obviously chocolates, wine, spirits, all that sort of thing, and a fine array of gift stalls as well. So really everything you could need for Christmas.
Precisely. So the idea routine for that particular Zion and the precursor, of course, to the Lincoln Christmas Market, which takes place next year. No, next week. Sorry. I mean, slight sort of temporal thing there. Don't panic. Lincoln City Council, honestly, wasn't really...
Full sabotaging.
Exactly. It probably will take place next year. It takes place this year as well. I don't think the weather forecast has been that challenging at this stage, although it tends to usually get a little bit more chilly when the Lincoln Christmas Market is actually on. It's kind of like it goes together, first week of December. Are you doing the washing up at present, Ian? I mean, in which case, congratulations, well done. How's it going?
Am I what, sorry?
Are you doing the washing up?
I'm trying to cook my breakfast and do at the same time.
You see, the multitasking skills. And Ollie and Obo?
I've so far blamed you for two drawn sausages.
Dear. Ollie and Obo, the two cats, are they there?
Obo was out touring the tourist spots, the back lane, I think, and Ollie's been in for his breakfast. But
Do we have back lanes in Lincoln, Sally? Or is it a northern expression? I guess...
I think we do. Maybe not in Lincoln, but out in the villages. Yeah, you talk
back
about
lanes.
Back lanes.
I've never heard of it.
I didn't think you would, Ben, because, you know...
I've never heard of that.
Brighton, you know, the term back
maybe not lane. In Brighton.
No.
It's just, again, part of our ongoing thing, as Ian will attest to, the cultural differences of our fair country. You know,
indeed.
Very good.
Interesting
that,
isn't it? I've never thought about something like that.
Yeah, well... There we are. That could be the...
I could Google it immediately.
Precisely. It's a way forward. And talking about research, how's your latest book coming on, Ian?
It's come to a sudden halt, actually, but I've had a... I got about 10,000 words in and decided there were some things that were very good in it. It wasn't going to work out as it was structured, so I really had to stop. And I've had a sort of gestation period. And I've now got an idea which I think will carry me through. So I'm going to start... working on it shortly, but you know, as you know, I've had a kitchen put in the house, and it's just been impossible to do anything apart from that. I've been cleaning dust away.
Well, once you've had the builders in here, and you don't know, life is never the same again. Really, no. So you ask yourself.
As I speak, yes, it's Obo just come in.
Splendid.
Cat. Demanding his breakfast, so I'm going to have to go, Alex. I can't. There's a certain amount of priorities here. Feeding the cats, I'm afraid.
Exactly. This is Sire and FM, Lincoln
Spurs. Can you hear
him? Lincoln's first community radio station where feeding the cat is possibly more entertaining than the breakfast show. That's all right. I know it's not something that our marketing geniuses would necessarily say use it as a brand, but I quite like it, actually.
We should make a pet show. We should have Frodo in the morning and then obviously Ollie and Oberyn.
Bold and ambitious, and you know, you might find feeding the cat slightly more interesting than listening to our programmes. It's a way forward. Ben.
I never said that.
Last two questions. Would you like to put them to Ian Lennox, please?
Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting centrefold at Lingvers this morning?
Yes.
And will you be joining us again soon?
I hope so, yes.
Very good. Enjoy your breakfast.
She's out crying at my leg.
Always assuming that actually feeding the cat doesn't take priority in those sorts of ways. It's important, you know. And then, you know, cats deserve to be fed as well. There we are. Well done, Oba. We won't ask him the same question last week.
Somebody stroke Alex on the head, will you?
Yeah, okay. Paparazzi, Lady Gaga will take us around to the news as we say farewell and au revoir and our Wiedersehen pet. See what we did there? To Ian Lennox as he heads off into the background there. And then after the news, all being well in a new relationship. Well, Tinder's gift guides to avoid awkward moments at Christmas. Ooh, Trey's Orcs.